Blog Talk Radio.
This is Chief for Yourself. Now, here's Gio.
Hi, welcome to Chief for Yourself. Great to have you here today, wherever you happen to be in the world at this moment. Our guest on the program is a former world trampoline champion and Hall of Fame gymnast. He's taught and coached at the college level, too. But you probably know him best as an author. Dan Millman's first book, the internationally best-selling Way of the Peaceful Warrior, was adapted into a movie starring Nick Nolte. Dan's written a lot of other books, too. He was with us a while back to talk about his book, The Four Purposes of Life. And today he's back to tell us about The Hidden School, Return of the Peaceful Warrior. Dan, I want to start with a sort of timeline for a moment. It's the mid-1960s. You're a student athlete at Berkeley, one of the most happening places on the planet at the time. You stop into an all-night gas station and meet the guy you will come to call Socrates. Tell us, who is Socrates and what kind of impression does he end up making in your life?
Well, Socrates is different people, Jar. First of all, he is a real flesh and blood old guy I met in December of 1966, in an old Texaco station on the corner of the UC campus. I was walking home from a late night date, about 3 in the morning, and hard to believe I stayed up that late, but I did when I was young, and met this old fellow who wouldn't tell me his name. I came to call him Socrates, but he's also a character in my book. It has a new life there. I wrote one book about his life, which started in Russia in 1872. So he's different people, but he's the archetypal mentor. And many people who read Way of the Peaceful Warrior said, Dan, I wish I had a teacher like Socrates, and I want to tell him, you do. That's why I wrote the book, so my teacher could become yours as well and convey some of these universal reminders and principles and perspectives that people seem to find engaging for the last, 37 years between Way of the Peaceful Warrior and the new book, The Hidden School, which actually completes that first book. It's a part of it.
Would that be a sequel?
No, actually it's not. People are used to, Game of Thrones 1, 2, and 3, where one follows the next. But I didn't write another book after Way of the Peaceful Warrior for 10 years. And then new experiences and insights came, so I wrote Sacred Journey of the Peaceful Warrior, which was intimately connected. In fact, it took place prior to the final chapter of Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And people after that, because at the end of that second book, the narrative story of Dan's adventures, that's part of, I've written guidebooks like The Four Purposes of Life, but this is the essential peaceful warrior story for those who like adventures and quests. Mm-hmm. And at the end of Sacred Journey, people were saying, I find this statuette of a samurai, and it seems to point me to Japan, and I waited 27 years, was pestering me, when are you going to write the next book, Dan? So finally, 37 years after the initial book, it was time I could articulate the ideas that I needed to articulate in The Hidden School. But both Sacred Journey, since you asked for a timeline, Sacred Journey and The Hidden School both take place within the time frame of my original book. So both these stories, The Hidden School ends just before the final chapter of Way of the Peaceful Warrior, as if I stuck it into the book. It fills in some blanks of the years of traveling, so that's how it fits in. It doesn't take place after the initial book. It is part of it.
Mm. Stay with our timeline for a moment. After your years at Berkeley, you described your situation with a great line that just blew me away. I was haunted by the feeling that I was missing something important, that real life was passing me by, while I played pretend in the shallows of convention. Wow, I thought that had a sort of everyman feel to it. Talk about what that time was like for you.
There was something in me, and I believe the reason my books have been so popular is because it reflects what's in every person. I am kind of an everyman, not in some superior position preaching to people. My experience seems to reflect many. And that feeling, that yearning for the transcendent, for some bigger picture wisdom, understanding what I was doing here, not just rather than a tunnel vision plowing through life, just doing what I was supposed to. I wanted to find out what it's all for, and that began a long quest, which distilled itself and organized itself into this trilogy.
We hear the pounding of war drums most every day, and we're all too aware of the warriors who come back from combat to live shattered lives. And with that in mind, what do you think it means to be a peaceful warrior in today's world?
Well, that's an important question, especially for those not familiar with my work. The term peaceful warrior really reflects all of us, because everybody I've ever seen is striving to live with a peaceful heart, a sense of serenity, equanimity, a way to rise above or gracefully pass through the stresses of everyday life. But at the same time, we all can acknowledge there are times in our lives we need a warrior's spirit. And it's not just about fighting, though we do have our own battles with self-doubt, insecurity, that sort of thing, inner demons, so to speak. But it's really about applying a warrior's spirit and strength and commitment and resilience to the challenges of everyday life, in relationships, finances, decision-making, careers, all these things. There are times we need to really buckle down, and we all have. That's the thing. Your listeners know times they have gone through some difficult situation, loss, a change, and that calls forth that warrior spirit. Life develops what it demands.
The Peaceful Warrior saga is one you didn't really expect to be a big hit. It didn't have a lot of success in the beginning, did it?
No. I thought maybe a few college students would like it, but not to sound too self-congratulatory. I mean, the fact is it's been passed generation to generation, parents to children, children to parents, for the last 37 years since its publication. But at the start, because, you see, it's not memoir, my books. And it's not exactly autobiography. Way of the Peaceful Warrior has many elements and incidents from my actual life, but I also wove in some fiction for the sake of the story and the teaching. So that's what made it a bit unusual. And so there's this blend of fact and autobiography and fiction in my various stories, and that's how it took shape.
Your writing has what I call, for lack of a better word, a muscularity. It's not airy-fairy or new agey, a word I really don't like. It has a certain masculinity to it, and that's okay. I mean, we've always assigned the ethereal or spiritual matters to the feminine energies. So with that in mind, how does the average guy get the courage to, as you put it, just do it?
Well, one way I look at this is my background as an athlete and a coach, I think, helped dispose me to actual outcomes in real life rather than abstract notions and beautiful sounding ideas that you want to ask, what do I do with this? And in fact, that's reflected in, I've been teaching for 30 years various seminars and trainings and retreats, and virtually always we get 40 to 60% around, clustering around 50% males, 50% females. So unlike, as you say, a lot of spiritual teachings that tend to be a little bit up in the air, soft, and, you know, they attract female energy, most of these trainings, New Age type trainings, attract mostly women, I seem to have found a balance that men and women, and obviously women are great athletes too. There's this new egalitarianism. We haven't finished yet, though. I'm definitely a feminist. I have three daughters and a granddaughter and three grandsons as well. So I think, yes, the book seems to appeal to men and women in equal measure, perhaps because it's a story of an athlete. People can relate to it. Mm-hmm. It's grounded. That's why I recommend people have their head in the clouds but their feet on the ground.
I want to look at the idea of the ego. You've had a lot of accomplishments and a nice share of winning. You can rightfully be proud of these things. Do you think we really don't understand the ego, that the ego gets a bad rap and it's really a useful part of our makeup?
I think it is, John. I have my own ideas about the ego. You know, it used to be in the ancient times, people who didn't want to take responsibility would say, the devil made me do it. And today, we're more sophisticated. Now we say, the ego made me do it, as if it's something separate from us, our worst part. But you know, when Freud coined the term, it just meant I. It was simply a handy way to identify ourselves as I. The I meant the ego, meant our identity, our sense of self. It was neutral. There was nothing bad about it. But now people say, oh, my ego made me do it. Oh, that's too much ego. You know, if we had no ego, we would sit there drooling. I mean, we have no identity, mm-hmm. no sense of self at all. The problems happen when we think this separate self is all we are. And that's a conventional belief that most of us hold to, and which I help people to transcend in the Hidden School. In the new book, particularly, we go into those elements of the different truths that operate at conventional and transcendental levels. And by transcendental, I mean life's bigger picture. It's almost as if we're watching two creatures struggle down in the weeds at the base of a mountain. And suddenly we found ourselves transported to the top of the mountain. We're on the peak, looking at a beautiful panorama in the distance, because everything looks more beautiful in the distance. And that's the kind of bigger picture perspective that we need, and I think all of us yearn for, at least now and then, because 99% of our time is spent, as it should be, in the conventional demands of everyday life, children, school, work, and so on. And yet, every individual heart, I think, yearns for the transcendent, to rise above, to find some sense of liberation, where we don't take ourselves or our lives quite so seriously. We realize that life is a game we play, as if it matters. That's the best approach.
Our guest on this Chi for Yourself is Dan Millman, author of The Hidden School, Return of the Peaceful Warrior. Your writing certainly has aspects of the inner life woven throughout it, and there's lots to contemplate for the reader. But your views on meditation, for instance, are a little bit different, even unorthodox, some would say. What do the contemplative disciplines mean to you? Do you meditate? Is that important to you?
Well, I haven't put meditation up on a pedestal as like a solution to everything, but it does have its uses. The way I would look at it, John, is that meditation is an exercise. It's a different kind of exercise because it's stillness, but we're still doing something very deliberately. You know, if you do push-ups over time, progressively, then predictably, we can say you're going to get stronger. And in the same way, if someone meditates and just sits in a good posture, sits still with their eyes closed or half closed, and they're not distracted by all the whirling around them, their attention starts to drift toward their thoughts and feelings, this so-called inner life, and they begin to get to know it. So if you do this exercise called meditation over time, you begin to gain some freedom or distance from the stuff of mind. You begin to understand why Mark Twain once said, "I've had many troubles in my life, most of which never happened." Mm. Because most of our troubles mm-hmm. are up in our head. Mm-hmm. And by gaining some distance from thoughts, we understand why Lao Tzu said, "As soon as you have a thought, laugh at it." And he's not talking about thoughts like writing poetry or solving math problems or remembering our groceries. It's about the discursive mind. These thoughts pop into our head, sometimes positive, sometimes negative. We get some more distance, and we begin to see the nature of mind. And that has some benefits in terms of a certain freeing from the noise of the mind. And that, so yes, it's a useful exercise, and I've created in the Hidden School a rather powerful 4-minute meditation, which I'll be teaching at various seminars and so on, and online as well through my website soon. But I present it in the book, and it's a meditation on the process of dying. Now, why would anyone want to do that? There are a number of reasons, but the primary one, and the major goal I have in writing The Hidden School, is to leave the reader who finishes the book with a newfound appreciation for the incredible, just unbelievable opportunity to live a human life on planet Earth. How rare that is, and how much we take it for granted. It's almost inevitable. We wake up in the morning with all the things we have to do that day. Our attention is on this or that. But we forget just the opportunity to have a chance to live a human life. That is what I want to convey, and to help enlighten people up.
The hidden school includes looks at the martial arts. You're very accomplished in martial arts. You have a black belt in Aikido, I believe.
I do, so now if I'm ever attacked on the street, I can whip out my certificate, you know. You know, yeah, I did get a black belt in Aikido. I've explored the breadth of martial arts. I can't say I've gone into super depth, but enough to get a black belt. That means you're a beginner, really. It's just that understanding martial arts gets us in touch with the warrior spirit, because in sports, all that's at stake is you might lose a point or a game or a match. But in the martial arts, the lineage is about life and death. It's more sincere and deep in that sense. So that's the value I found in practicing and studying various martial arts, from judo to karate to aikido to Filipino arts to a degree, and tai chi, which I highlight in the hidden school, Tai Chi Chuan, because I'm in China at the time. In this story, but I also explored various other arts, yeah.
Parents might think about getting their kids involved in martial arts, and if you would, explain the difference between martial arts and self-defense.
Well, martial arts can give kids a certain confidence and a grounding. I think it's great for kids, depending on the teacher. It's always depending on the teacher. But, yeah, self-defense is quite different from... Martial arts are arts. You learn ritualized movements, you practice certain things over and over, you develop coordination and focus. Same with gymnastics. It's great for kids as well to develop strength and courage and focus and flexibility and so on. And these are all good foundation arts, no matter what sports children end up doing. It's great getting exposed to both of these things. But self-defense is very different because of the adrenal stress. If someone is actually attacked, they get tunnel vision, dry mouth. The fancy moves don't work. You have to use a high percentage shots. People can look up Fast Defense online, fastdefense.com. And for one of the best self-defense courses, I know this Krav Maga and others from Israel, but fastdefense.com is one of the most realistic and helpful and effective methods for avoiding trouble in the first place, defining boundaries, keeping out of trouble, but also if it comes to that knockout type of self-defense. And it can be taught in much less time than the years people spend studying martial arts. Obviously, there's great value in practicing something over time as well.
You were, I believe, 9 years old when you were first exposed to martial arts. What were you studying then?
Well, I don't know how many nine-year-olds do serious study, but I did start judo when I was nine. I met the great judoka, Jean LaBelle. He was a world champion. Great guy. He let the little kids like me throw him around, taking falls like a stuntman. So anyway, that's what I started with, and then later karate, you know, in high school. And then for 10 years, I just did gymnastics. I didn't do martial arts, so I got a 7th-degree black belt on the trampoline. and then I went back to the arts when I started coaching in Aikido and so on. But, you know, yeah, again, I don't know what this will mean to your listeners, but male or female, I think it's really useful for someone to find a good teacher. That's more important than the style of art. But finding a good teacher is really, really beautiful for anyone.
We're talking today about The Hidden School, but to reference another of your books, The Four Purposes, the second of the purposes is finding our career and calling. And many people, even in the middle years, are trying to figure out what they want to be when they grow up. Talk about the difference between a career and a calling.
I'd be happy to, sure. Yes, and I wrote The Four Purposes as a manual to help clarify some big picture elements of life as well. It's not a story like The Hidden School, but for those who just like a straightforward guidebook. And yes, as you say, the second purpose is finding our career and calling. A calling is something we're just attracted to. We don't always know why. We might have discovered it as a kid, you know, collecting stamps or video games, whatever it is, it's something we love to do when we have free time. And some callings develop into a career. Somebody likes to play guitar and they end up making a living at it. But often they just stay callings. There's something we're drawn to. It could be the military. military, the clergy. There are various meanings of the word calling, but it's just something we love to do. And I love to write. I never had an idea that I would necessarily make a living at it. Whereas, a career is what we do for an income. We may love our career. We may find it meaningful, like the people we work with, and so on. But if we weren't getting paid anything, we'd have to find something else. Mm-hmm. So the primary thing is developing an income. But for some people, their career is also a calling. They love doing it. Now, how do you know if it's a calling? Well, if you won the lottery, would you continue to do it? If you would, it's also a calling. Mm-hmm. If you would quit your day job, it's just a career or a job. So it's important for people to understand the difference, because that way starving artists can also get a day job to help be more independent and while they pursue their calling. And at the same time, someone is totally wrapped up in their career might reawaken their calling, something they once loved doing, and enrich their life doing practicing that in their spare time. So that's what I mean by the difference between the two.
The Hidden School for me had a surprise ending. It didn't finish the way I thought it would, and I'll leave it to the reader to experience that. One last question for you, Dan. As someone who has lived a rich life, if you could speak to that person who's maybe working in the office cubicle every day and looking to make a life change, leave us with some peaceful warrior type advice to help that person answer the call.
I think if I had to just do a summary type, there's so much advice. Stanislaw Lec once said, "I wanted to tell the world just one word. Unable to do that, I became a writer." And John, I can relate because, 17 books. They say you teach what you need to learn. I must have needed to learn a lot. But to leave your readers with one reminder, that's all I can do is offer reminders, is it's important for us, since we tend to second guess ourselves and wonder if that decision was correct, if we made a mistake looking back on our life, to trust the process of our life unfolding, to know that wherever we step, the path is going to appear.
Your website is home to lots of information about your books and more, and that's peacefulwarrior.com?
Yes, that would be a good place. They can even learn about their life path.
Yeah.
The book is The Hidden School, Return of the Peaceful Warrior, from Dan Millman. Dan, you bring great energy to this show, a show that focuses on essential energy. You were a great guest last time as well, and whatever your pursuits in the future, I hope you'll come back and talk with us again.
That would be a pleasure, John. Thanks for having me on.
We link to our guest's websites at chieforyourself.com on the start page, and when you go to the page, if you're not there already, leave your email address in that little box provided, and that way you'll get the heads up from Genulines. That will keep you up to date on who will be on the program and when. Those dates and times can and sometimes do change. Get information on posts intended to help you live genuinely, and freebies, too. That's going to do it for today. Thanks so much for being with us and for the social media likes and follows, too. Be well, and I'll talk to you soon.